mean, the last game of the match, Yzterman made 5 of 5 first serves, and that kind of epitomized what he was doing at the big moment. So for Novak, you know, I think he played a couple sloppy points, and Yzterman, because he's kind of a weathered veteran, he gets it. He's played these guys before. I think that allowed him to kind of deal with the nerves better. But look, I just think it's a little bit of a missing edge on that razor focus right now.
Hey everyone, John Wertheim here. It is this week's Sports Illustrated Tennis Channel Tennis Podcast. We're at the Australian Open. We have a guest today, a special guest in Paul Annacone, former player, former coach of a number of players, including Pete Sampras and Roger Federer, now an esteemed Tennis Channel analyst. We talk a bit about what's happened through the first couple rounds here in Melbourne. Obviously, the big shocker, the 1A top-of-the-fold news is Novak Djokovic, six-time champ, losing in the second round to Dennis Yzterman. But we also talk about some players to watch, other developments in the draw. And what about that Serena Williams, who comes in and through two matches anyway, looks exceedingly sharp. So without further ado, we bring him in now, Paul Annacone. Good morning. How are you?
Good to be here, JW.
It is Friday morning. We are maybe 12 hours removed from the biggest upset in men's tennis since, fill in the blank.
Oh man, you fill in the blank.
We were talking about this. I mean, you really have to scratch your head on this one.
Roger at Wimbledon against
Stachowski.
Yeah, that's probably the last one.
What happened? What's your analysis?
It's an interesting time for Novak. I mean, we've seen the stumble. You know, I wouldn't have categorized it as that big of a deal, but now it's getting bigger. You know, the problem is for Novak is that let's look at the last few years have been ridiculous. I mean, he's never lost. And so now every little loss, you just wonder, is this a habit? But, you know, now to lose at a major where he's won 6 times, you know, and against a guy who's a good player, and he played very, very well, but it's someone stylistically that should be okay for Novak. You don't see many players that can hang with Novak from the baseline for 5 hours, particularly guys that are journeymen. And that's right. What Yzterman did. So for me, there's a little bit of an edge that's disappeared right now. And you can think about why, but it's definitely kind of evaporated for the time being.
What do you tell him? And after Wimbledon last year, you say, you know what, you won the French Open. It was this great career goal, you achieved it. I could see why mentally you're a little fried. And after the U.S. Open, you say, well, you know, you got to the final, you lost to a good player, you had some crazy scheduling that probably set your rhythms off, remember, with all the retirements.
Sure.
This losing at the Slam, you've won 6 times to a guy outside the top 100. If you're the coach, what do you say?
Well, I'm really a big believer in that you want your environment to not be one of panic or major changes, because look, all these guys and the ladies, the best guys and ladies, are really pretty much creatures of habit. So I think it's important to be pragmatic and not, you know, emotionally volatile about what's happened, but you have to use the pragmatism to make a plan. And now for Novak, I think it's time to kind of just have a little look and say, okay, what's going on and why? And look, I've seen it, and we've all seen it through the great players over the years, is that you can't dominate forever. And especially in an era like this where there's so many great players, and now where there's so many young players that are knocking on the door. So we've talked about a changing of the guard for quite some time. So is that happening now? Well, for Novak, in order to not let that happen, he's got to sit back. Got to, okay, what do I want to do differently? How do I need to try to change things, tweak things, so that I can be a little bit more consistent? I mean, let's be honest, he was ruthless and he was relentless, point in and point out, for year after year after year. And now we're seeing a couple of missed balls, a couple of dodgy shot selection choices, and a couple of big moments where he's not Novak. So we talk about narrow margins, John, but this is the epitome of it.
It also, it does put into perspective what the Big Four have done. I mean, this is, you know, there are 128 players in the draw. It stands to reason you could have a bad day. These other players are awfully good tennis players. The fact that he's gone through and a second round upset is so shocking. It shows you how keyed in they had to be in all these Grand Slam matches. What Did you see anything? I mean, he was asked physically, or how are you feeling? And he was very game and said, no, it wasn't anything physical. And it didn't seem as though fatigue was really an issue. I mean, they were both moving fine after 4.5 hours. It did seem as though some of his shots, I mean, Istomin had, I think, 63 winners against the best defensive player maybe of all time. Did you see anything there?
Yeah, no, I didn't see anything physically. Again, like I say, you just look at shot selection and you look at the misses and also kind of the category of how the points are going, really. And you know, you're missing targets by 6 inches. You're missing serve spots by a little bit. You make one or two unforced errors at inopportune times. And to me, that's about kind of that razor focus that usually the greatest of the greats have. And that razor focus kind of goes along with the ability to totally believe it's going to happen in the biggest moments.
Right. And that's what you kept waiting. Oh, we've seen this movie. You know, the guy on the other side of the net had his chance, and now Novak slammed the door. And that just never...
Yeah, it never really happened. And look, I mean, the last game of the match, Istomin made 5 of 5 first serves. And that kind of epitomized what he was doing at the big moment. So for Novak... You know, I think he played a couple sloppy points, and Istomin, because he's kind of a weathered veteran, he gets it. He's played these guys before. I think that allowed him to kind of deal with the nerves better. But look, I just think it's a little bit of a missing edge on that razor focus right now.
So who's the big winner? Dennis Istomin notwithstanding.
I mean, if Rafa's playing well, I think Rafa's the big winner. I think this gives Rafa a great opportunity to get to the finals. I mean, I think Rafa has, you know, a draw set up where he can do some major damage, but he's got Sasha Zverev next, who had match point against him at Indian Wells last year before Rafa got through.
Surface.
So that whole side of the draw, and I think the general locker room, everyone's thinking now, maybe this is a time for one or two of us to sneak in there.
Is that what happens? I mean, that stands to reason. Is that what happens? Other players sort of their ears perk up, and if you're Dimitrov or if you're Rafa, I should add too. You and I are talking. This is Paul Anika. We're talking on Friday morning. Rafa looked terrific last night.
He did. He was sharp. And you know, I don't think the locker room sits around and consciously spends a million hours talking about it. You get so engrossed in your own preparation, in your own world. But you have to look at the other players that have been playing terrific tennis. And Raonic getting to his first major final last year. And he played very well yesterday. And I haven't
talked about him much as a third seed.
Yeah, you know, he's been kind of quiet. But with his game, and he played well here last year as well, so he's in that immediate kind of quarterfinal section of Rafa, so he's going to have a lot of good tennis ahead to get through. And he plays Gilles Simon next, who's a great counterpuncher, but also one of my dark horses has been Grigor Dimitrov. I think his resurgence this year has been really clear. Starting at Brisbane, he and Danny Valverde have done a ton of really good work, and he beat three top ten players in Brisbane. Right. So let's see if Grigor can kind of string it together after a little bit of a bumpy year for him last year.
We should add he's right there in the Djokovic section of the draw tonight. Roger Federer plays Tomas Berdych. That's a tough third rounder for both of them. The obligatory Roger question. This is a guy, I think the head-to-head is 16-6 in favor of Roger. Obviously, a lot of those came at a different point in time. Berdych beat, here's one for you. Berdych beat Roger in the Athens Olympics in 2004. I was 13. So these guys have, they know each other a little bit. They've played together a few times. But what do you see from Roger?
Yeah,
so far?
This is, you know, and the thing about Berdych, too, is we've talked about him as... the best of the next guys, or one of them. And I think that his danger, we've seen it. You know, he's beaten Roger 6 times. He's beaten him at least at a couple majors.
I know Wimbledon and the U.S. Open.
And the U.S. Open when I was there. And it was conditions that I think are going to be similar to tonight's if the roof is open. If the roof is closed, it's a little bit of a different environment. And I actually think the night session is probably a little bit better for Berdych because it's a little heavier and slower. And with his power, he's able to still hit through the court more easily. And for Roger, it's a little bit more difficult. And when it's lively and fast, Berdych can struggle to control the ball. So I think this is a danger match for Roger, but look, he's played him 22 times. He's Roger Federer. He's going to go into this match knowing what to expect, but this is his first big test, and we're going to see where he is.
Does best of five help him or work against him?
I would say it helps him if he's fit, if there's no injury to his body, because it's just hard to play that good for that long against great players. And Roger won't panic. He'll be thoughtful on the court no matter what's going on. He'll try to figure out ways to problem solve. So I think the best of five will help him if his body's okay. But again, playing Burdick, you know, he's like Eastman, but a better player. He's been around a long time,
right.
And he's beaten these guys in best of five matches. Tonight, it's really going to be about how well Federer can control the baseline. If he's getting pushed around a lot from Burdick, and Burdick is ripping his second serve, ripping Roger's second serve off the return,
right,
and then dictating,
right,
that's going to be problematic.
What else have you seen? I mean, part of the fun of these early rounds of majors are you watch the stars play and you watch the big courts, but also you catch some names or some players that maybe you don't know as well. We were talking on the show about Ernesto Escobedo, who's been a little bit lost in this crop of Americans talk, but he qualifies, wins his first match, and then takes a set off David Ferrer. That's a nice outing for a guy outside the top 100. Who else have you seen that have impressed you? We'll stick it to the men's side, and we'll go to the women's in a second.
Yeah, I think for the men, you know, there's been, you mentioned Escobedo. He's got a big, powerful game. Got to see him play a couple times last year. He's just another one of those players that's got a lot of danger and a lot of firepower. I was able to watch some of the Zverev Tiafoe match yesterday. Francis Tiafoe starting to play some better tennis.
Yeah, how did he? I mean, Zverev obviously won.
Is just not as good yet,
right?
And Zverev's just a better player with more power and also with more experience. And he just got beat by a more experienced player that's just got a few more weapons and a little bit more composure right now. And I think that, you know, that was a sign. It's a good sign. I mean, it's a good sign because there's a lot of good players. Young Chung starting to play well again after having an injury last year. Now, he took a set off of Grigor yesterday and played some very good tennis. That very easily could have been a five-set match. Kyle Edmund lost a tough match to Carreño Busta, but still showing, you know, a lot of talent. I just think it's important to realize the ages. These guys are just so young still. You know, we saw Alex de Minaur, the young Australian, win in five sets before he lost to Sam Querrey. He's a very good 17-year-old. You know, that's amazing.
When you look 17. At a guy, Nishikori is 27 for perspective. So Nishikori's still in that sort of tail end of that young guns category. He's got a decade on de Minaur, 8 years on Zverev and Francis.
Absolutely. And we got to see Noah Rubin up close against Roger Federer. We don't talk a lot about Noah Rubin, a 20-year-old. And he is gritty. What I love about him is that he's able to adjust his game a little bit. Look, he is a controlled baseline player, but against Roger, he knew he had to play offensive tennis. So he stood up close to the baseline, got very aggressive, was a little bit more dictating with his ground strokes. He's a tremendous player. So, I mean, I just think it's really exciting time now to look at all the young names. We haven't even talked about Jack Sock very much.
He's been kind of floating.
Right. You know,
which is strange, isn't it? I mean, I think anybody would say he probably is the best bet before the tournament. He's looked terrific in his first two matches, and his name has barely come up.
Right, and he's kind of floated through the draw. Now he has to play Joe Wilfried Tsonga today. That's going to be a real tricky one for him. So I just think it's one of these times, and talk back about Novak. It's one of these times when the great ones start to hiccup, like Novak a little bit, like Roger getting hurt, like Rafa getting hurt, been taken. You know, then the younger guys start to feel, you know, like I said, it's not a conscious conversation, but they start to realize what's happening and it's time for them to really believe in themselves. So I think this is a really opportune time for that whole group of young players.
Let's transition to an unconscious conversation on the women's side, which is Serena's 35, Kerber's looks a little bit nervous defending a major for the first time. Maria Sharapova's not here. Azarenka's not here. Kvitova's not here. Is this one of these tournaments on the women's side where a player could slip through and win her first major? Or do you think it's Serena and Kerber and two pros will figure out a way to win six matches and get back to the final?
Yeah, well, the thing about Angie Kerber, she really has struggled.
She has, right?
Yeah, the first couple of matches have been tough for her. And you know, with great players, I always feel like they have to figure out ways to win those average matches. And some of them can do that and have it not dent their confidence. Some of them do that and don't ever get traction. I don't really know Angie Kerber well enough to know what her makeup is, but she's such a gritty competitor. I've got to think that those two clutch wins in the first two rounds will help her kind of loosen up and play a little bit better and start to play some of her good tennis. But she has to play Kristina Plíšková now, which is going to be a tough one. Eugenie Bouchard plays Coco Vandeweghe right below them. So there's an area where she's going to have to raise her game. And if she doesn't, she's going to be in trouble. Serena has looked incredibly shot.
Against two former top 10 opponents. That, I mean, draw did her no favors.
Right, that was a dangerous draw. I mean, I thought that was... and in some ways, what it does for a great player, too, is it zeroes them in. It makes them focus right away. We saw it with Novak and Verdasco. Verdasco had almost beaten Novak a couple weeks ago. Novak knew what he was getting right away, played great tennis against Fernando to kind of keep him at bay. Serena did the same thing, and now Serena has to face Nicole Gibbs. Her draw, look, the thing about Serena is it's on her racket.
Which is a different kind of pressure, isn't it?
It's a different kind of pressure, but boy, oh boy, I'd like it to be up to me. And there's very few people that have the capacity that no matter who you play, it's up to you, and that's Serena. So much of it's going to be about her mental preparation. I'm really excited to see what happens between Joe Konta and Caroline Wozniacki. Joe Konta is kind of my dark horse of the tournament. She plays
Wozniacki's mine, so we'll see how we do.
Yeah, and it's a great style matchup because Konta played unbelievable offensive tennis in Sydney and just hit Jeannie Bouchard and Radwanska right off the court in the last two matches, and that's tough to do against Caroline, who's a great defender. But I like what I see in Joe Konta. I love Caroline Wozniacki, so that's a great matchup. I think you have to look at those two as being, you know, potential quarterfinal matches for Serena if they get there. And to me, whoever comes out of that section wins the tournament.
Out of the let me ask you about Serena. We were talking about this last night. Again, it's Friday morning. On Thursday evening, Serena is supposed to play the first night match against Safarova, and she's sitting there, and she's in the locker room, and Djokovic is on the court. And I don't know if she's watching the match per se, but it's hard to avoid. You know, people are crowding around TVs, and you hear chatter, and you can even hear the crowd going crazy. I mean, you can almost tell, even if your eyes are closed, you can almost tell how the match is going. You're sitting there in the locker room, and the match before you, first of all, pushes your match late, so maybe your rhythms get a little bit out of kilter. And then you have this titanic upset, and the six-time champion bows out, and now you've got to go on and take the court. Do you think that impacts a player when there's a preceding match like that, especially if you're the favorite and there's a big upset? Do you think that has any bearing on the player that's next up on the court?
I think it absolutely can. And I think the most experienced players, it doesn't that much. I think what it does is, look, I can tell you from a coaching perspective, I've been in that situation as a coach with the player while that's going on. And really what it does is it kind of zeroes in your focus on almost just a little bit of a tweak of reality that everybody's vulnerable. And in some ways it's a good little jab, a good little kind of sobering reminder. And then what it does, it's just about managing, it's more about managing the dead time. And everyone has to do that a little bit differently.
How do players do that?
Well,
it's just so much solitaire you can play on your phone.
It just depends. I a lot of times, you know, with Roger, we would play cards, you know, and there's a number of times where, you know, you're playing cards and then you go into your routine with your trainer to warm up. You do your warm-up stuff and then all of a sudden someone loses a set and it goes another set. Then you sit back down again and wait 15 minutes. So that stop-start can be a little bit unsettling, but every player handles it a little bit differently. And I think the biggest thing is to make sure that you give yourself time to regroup so you can be mentally prepared. And that's about the player knowing what they need and the coach kind of pushing them to operate towards what they need, keeping in mind what's happening on the court.
We should point out that Serena Williams then goes out on the court, gets off to a nice, solid start, and ends up winning her matches in her match last night, straight sets. All right, so through two rounds, pick a winner on both sides now.
I really think that Andy Murray is the man to beat in the men's side.
You think this is it's funny, we didn't talk about him as being one of the big winners from the Djokovic bow out, and that's the guy who's prevented him from winning this thing.
Yeah, he's got a rough section of the draw. The thing that I don't know how to really evaluate that closely with Andy is his emotional volatility, because we talk about it a lot, but now it's changed because he's the hunted. And so there's more expectation, and he's such a perfectionist. He is really tough on himself. He wants everything to be just right. He wants to win every point, doesn't want to miss any balls. And there's a lot of emotion that we've seen over the year that comes out during the match. The thing that you can't weigh is what that emotion does to your fuel tank. And that's one of the things that I don't think he fully comprehends, is that when he's in unbelievable shape, but when he allows that volatility to kind of come to the surface,
The yelling at the box and the pacing around.
That takes away from the fuel tank in the quarter, semis, and finals. So for him, it's going to be really important just to be efficient and to really stay clear of mind. This will put more pressure on him, not consciously, but subconsciously, that Novak has lost. He's got a good matchup with Sam Querrey. Sam has the firepower to beat him. We saw Sam beat Novak at Wimbledon. But it's going to be very difficult over five sets for Sam to be consistent enough to get through the great defenses of Murray. So I think Murray's the guy on that side of on the men's side. I would look at if Roger can get to Murray in the quarters unscathed without having two brutal matches with Burdick and Kay, which is a big if.
Right.
That matchup is very good for Roger because he likes playing Andy Murray.
On this,
on
these conditions, probably a night match.
Yeah, I think he would be comfortable with that match. So that's danger for Murray. Other than that, I think Murray is the guy to beat. And if I were going to go kind of with a dark horse, it's not even really a dark horse. It's the great Rafael Nadal. I mean, I just think he played great last night. He played great in Sydney. Brisbane. Brisbane before he lost to Raonic. I was surprised he lost that match. But he was playing really terrific tennis. And he'll get stronger as the tournament goes on if he stays healthy. So I'm going to go with... That's such a weak call, but I'm going to go with Murray with the backup of Rafa. And
first slam where Murray's the top seed.
Yeah,
and
he's never won
and you
here.
Say that about Rafa, but this is, it's been more than a year since he's even been to week two of a slam.
Right.
So Rafa's going to
feel the pressure. And I think on the women's side, I think whoever gets to the semifinals out of Serena's section, I still think that this could be another year where we're going to see a different woman winner. And I like Jo Konta. I wouldn't be shocked if Caroline plays terrific tennis and gets out into that quarterfinal match as well. But I really think it's the Serena Williams section of the draw.
That Serena quarter.
And then the dark horse for the women's side, I'm such a huge Angelique Kerber fan. It's hard to say she's a dark horse because she's number one in the world. But the way she's played the last...
She is a little bit of a dark horse, though, right?
I can't say that I favor her to get to the finals based on what I've seen in the first two matches. But great players improve. They find ways to tweak their game, and I'm sure Angelique Kerber will do that. So she won't be shocking if she's playing to me in the finals again.
We will learn a lot about her one way or the other. All right, this was great.
Thanks, Sean.
Appreciate it. We'll do another one soon.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks, Paul. All right, thanks to Paul Anacone for stopping by. We'll visit again with Paul or with another guest to talk about the tournament next week. I'm John Wertheim. That was Paul Anacone. Our esteemed producer is Jamie Lasanti. Tune in next week. Meanwhile, enjoy the next few rounds of the 2017 Australian Open. We'll do it again next week from Melbourne.